Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, I want to tell you about the Sneaker Newsletter. I've been writing deep dives that are getting shared around the industry. Stories like the biggest failure in a century of sneakers, how MTV accidentally became sneaker culture's most effective marketing platform, why the sneaker industry cleaned house and what it means for resellers, when retail becomes fighting words and Dick's takes on Foot Locker, these are the stories you won't find anywhere else. And from someone who's actually been inside these companies. Every Tuesday, free industry analysis. Paid subscribers get three more posts per week, including vault stories from my 20 years, from my time wear testing products for Nike, building the East Bay blog, employee number 9 at StockX, signing up for Complex sneakers on my phone, Finish Line, Stadium Goods. It's been a wild ride. TheSneakerNewsletter.com, link in the show notes. DM me on Substack for a podcast listener's discount. All right, let's get into today's show.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What is good, everybody? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. I got my guys, Mike, Robbie, and Rohit. The whole crew is together. Voltron's back in the house. It's honestly been a long time since all four of us were on this show, so it's nice to see everybody's beautiful faces. How's everybody doing?
Lovely. I can't complain.
I did legs this morning, and I can complain because I am sore.
Robbie's stuck in the toilet as we speak. He can't get up. Someone go help.
Listen, I've been to the Palacio Robbie estate, and yes, his bathroom is that nice.
I spent hours in there for fun and business.
He does not have human children, but he read poops like the best of us dads when we just need to get away.
Little bathroom vacation is what we call it.
A juice cleanse for the mind.
This is not where
Robbie's house is. The artwork, though, like I feel like I could just get lost looking at all the cool art that he has.
There's a lot going on.
And I'm like, man, I only have like a handful of art pieces that I actually am excited about. Now I need to step my game up somehow so I can feel like I'm visiting Robbie at all times.
This is never going to be relevant ever again, but when I do use the bathroom, the cats like to follow me in, and I call them my creative directors. Because they're like,
is one strategy and one execution?
Yeah, whoever's worked in marketing, they're really hands-on creative directors, and they, yeah.
Pause on. No, I've had the moment where the cat will jump on me mid-poop, and I'm like, yep, that's execution. And then the other one's just meowing from the like hallway, like, what are like, you doing?
On,
I don't like... know if it, yeah, that strategy.
Oh, collaboration at its finest.
There is no AI prompt that can give you this conversation. And this is why you, listener, continue to subscribe to this podcast. I hope you rate and I hope you review us because nobody else in the world is giving you this.
I'm not giving you cat poop content at all. And it's not cat poop, but it's cat poop.
I mean, it's one thing. We've had a jarring week in the pooping community when old boy, the squatty potty CEO got because he did things that were not conducive to the brand. So we're trying to bring it back.
Oh, you're going to love it, guys.
I don't even remember what we were supposed to talk about on this
just
episode.
How we're doing.
Doesn't matter.
The question was, how are you doing? And this is where we arrived.
But that's my time. I'll see you guys.
I know the other three. I know you three are doing great, too. But has anybody been rocking or copping anything?
I've been rocking this. Is my official Friday shoe, the Fleshlight React. It's just that's what the color is to me. And like I've been told, don't say that out loud. Oh, sorry.
HR is knocking at Roy's door as we speak. Sir, we heard you again. Please stop.
And by HR, you mean my ex-partner. She's like, I thought I moved out of this. Anyway, that's what I've been rocking and copping. What about you guys?
Oh, God. Okay, so my rocking is something we're probably going to talk about a little later, is the Reebok Engine A 26. I won't dive too deep because we're going to have a deeper conversation about that. But that's the Rocket, and copping's not a shoe. I'm about to teach my oldest, my beloved sport of tennis, so got him a Wilson Blade, and I dove into a whole different brand this time, but the Head Boom MP, so.
Pause.
We got tennis rackets on tennis rackets right now.
That's a fun fact about me. There's tennis balls and racket downstairs in the basement. Guess how many times they've been used in like 4 years?
Three.
Zero.
Anywho, dang, I won't go over.
you just said we'll discuss later, but there really is no time like the present because I've been manhandling them the entire time we've been talking. The Engine A26. And so where do I start? These are really, really good. The texture materials are really something to behold that has this like, very prevalent throughout the industry. It doesn't breathe through. It's not see-through, but it's that kind of like jacquard, like plasticky material here on the side.
It's like that fused mesh they've been using kind of deal.
But it's really stiff, and there's a soft mesh here on the inner toe cutouts. And then this like mudguard toe box overlay here happening. Isn't leather, it's like...
It's faux leather. It's
artificial. Yeah, but it feels good. Like, oh, yeah. It's like, it doesn't feel bad. Then you have this nice synthetic gold on the internal side. Overall, just like, I like them. This colorway is really nice. I pulled out the inner sock liner to show off the kind of, maybe you can see it. It's a little bit different of a Reebok print. And I think they should have put that more on the outside. That's a really cool looking, like, aggressive looking. Has movement to it, as we discussed over and over again on our last episode about shoes and logos with movement.
This looks design, like the blacktop stuff from back in the 90s.
Yeah, it does. And like this plastic TPU like action happening here. I liked how it's a raised vector here on it. It's overall, it's a very good looking shoe. I think it's an upgrade from the last version, the 2025. Yeah, the first Engine A there.
Yeah.
Very cool shoe though. And then just last little plug here for what I want to be copping. I didn't know this until recently, but did you know that Slim Thug had a brand that he like Spider is his brand? I didn't know that.
Are we all just really old?
I was just going to defer to Mike.
I was going to defer to Mike
as senior Houston correspondent, but no, that's pretty cool that Slim Thug has a brand. I mean, the rest of my questions are, does the rest of Swisha House also have product?
No, you're talking about... Wait. Slim Thug? You're talking about Young Thug, right?
Young Thug. Oh, my God. I feel so stupid right now.
That's what I'm confused. Wait, Young Thug.
He said Houston.
Jeffrey?
I'm like, no, Atlanta. Wrong Thug.
Mr.
Thug. Mr. Thug.
Sorry,
excuse
Mr. Thug,
my ignorance.
I didn't know
Spider was owned by Young Thug. I see so many young kids at like basketball camps wearing Spider. And I didn't put the two and two together. I'm guessing no one else here did either.
No, for the longest time, I didn't realize there were two Spider brands because there's a Spider that's like a outdoor ski brand.
Yeah,
that's the one I knew about. And then recently, I saw kids wearing Spider with the five in it, which I don't understand.
With the five,
one out of eight.
We just blew
legs.
Past Donovan Mitchell too. You know,
right? Donovan Mitchell.
Adidas was like, out with that Spider. We got a new Spider.
I was just going to say, that's a Pixar movie waiting to happen, is like a spider that's a spy, and then you can call it Spider with like S-P-Y-D-E-R.
Cut the check.
So Young Thug's Spider with the five was founded in 2019. I see all these young kids wearing it, and it's like a really good like juxtaposition of nostalgia and like new age, because the graphics look old, kind of like Ed Hardy, but they're cut and styled for like young kids to enjoy. Anywho, I bring that all up. Because on March 3rd, Adidas is partnering with Spider to drop a new collab on the Superstar Super Modified. So it's a really bold take on the Superstar. There's a red and black colorway and a black on black colorway. Both come with really crazy bright yellow and pink laces to interchange with. But I can just see so many kids like enjoying this style of shoe. And it makes me feel good because I also like it. And I'm like, wait, I can relate to these kids a little bit. Like, a shoe designed for them and kind of for the next generation, I think looks cool. Does this mean I'm cool?
Robbie's hip, guys, if you didn't know.
Absolutely. Rob, you're the coolest one out of the four of us, Rob.
I confused my thugs. I confused, and I'm still into the shoe. But it comes out March 3rd. You can buy it on the Adidas Confirmed app from Spider directly. But just, like, I really enjoy the aesthetic of, like, the kind of stuff we were wearing, some of us were wearing in high school, like the really, really bold, aggressive kind of faux, like metal kind of gear. And then just
Affliction?
Like,
were you wearing Affliction, Robbie?
It was cool. I mean, I'm just saying it was cool. And Spider's kind of taking all those same vibes and giving young kids now, like, you know, that late 2000s core. And it's like, sure, these super modified Adidas, I think, really bridge the gap between the two. So go buy those March 3rd. Sorry, Mr. Thug. I know you're the younger one. Shout out Atlanta. But I thought
no,
it was
don't
just
wanna, no disrespect from Robbie. He just didn't know.
And we don't want to body shame the slimmer thug either. Like,
yeah, right.
And you know what, Robbie? I made us go ahead.
All thugs need hugs, is where I was going to add.
And every thug needs a lady. That's what Ja Rule told me.
No affiliation with Ja Rule. This is not any
affiliation. I can't do it.
But yeah, go buy the super modified and go buy those Reeboks. And go.
I'm just going to say, Robbie, I had a similar middle age moment where I was regaling the tales of a rapper making fun of LaMelo Ball for getting into a wreck. And I think I used Little Baby when it was, in fact, Da Baby. So I have empathy for you, my friend.
To be fair, I thought it was the same people for the longest time, but I'm just old, so.
To any burgeoning rappers listening to our podcast, please differentiate yourself. If for no other reason, so middle-aged men 15 to 20 years older than you don't get you confused in a public-facing forum like this one. Thank you.
Well, Young Thug is very established. I just want to get... So, I feel like Young Thug's music, too. And we get we're an episode of digressing. Nick, have you been wearing her?
Young Thug is well established, too, though. He's been the boss of all bosses, the boss.
The preeminent thug. You
know, there's a few out there. And then don't forget the real thug, Ronald McDonald.
John Cena?
Ronald McDonald.
I thought you were thinking about the director of Thugonomics himself, John Cena, but he's hard to see nowadays.
Oh, man. Well, Nick, what shoes have you been wearing? Chucks?
I wore Vans Old Schools yesterday. Just plain, like, you know, this classic blue Vans Old Schools. Day before that, I wore New Balance 2002 Rs that are, like, my absolute beater shoe at this point. The, like, gray and pink and purple kind of had that, like, General Lee's Kith vibe, I guess. And then, nice. I don't know. I'm not buying anything. There's some interesting stuff coming out. I think the Spider shoes are really, the video they did for that was really cool for that launch. There's a lot of cool, like, weird, I shouldn't say weird, but like interesting running stuff, right? Like Skechers has a new, like, super high end running shoe. Adidas is launching a workout running shoe. It's like, we're like seeing this like cross training, not CrossFit, because that got negative connotation in the sneaker world somehow.
It's High Rocks. It's the same thing, but you run between every episode, right, every exactly. exercise.
Yeah. It's literally the same thing. Mike,
look, cross I'm just saying.
Training. Cross training.
Like, and Puma, so Puma did it first with the Deviate Nitro High Rocks. Yeah. And so everyone's jumping in on it now. I mean, shout out. They all look dope. I like the way this Adidas ones look, but High Rocks and CrossFit are exact same things. Just people trying to put pinky out and say High Rocks and be fancy. So
I mean, it's kind of interesting how trendy High Rocks has become. Like, I don't really understand how it became, like, more buzzworthy than, you know.
Well, because the CrossFit CEO
and Bumblebees
might be raging racist. So that's... Might be, right?
More popular. Allegedly, we're not trying to get sued.
Allegedly, I'm sorry. I forgot to put the...
It's pretty much not allegedly.
In that case...
Rose, like, never mind.
In the immortal words of Michael Jordan, fuck that guy.
You got to be careful with that allegedly, man. Always
before
allegedly.
We get into more of the sneaker stuff, did you guys happen to read the article on ESPN about the Black Mamba? And the story around the Jordan 19 being the original Black Mamba pitch for Michael. It's a really great story.
Yeah.
I believe it was Baxter Holmes wrote it, right? We want to make sure we credit the author. Yeah. And what were you saying, Mike?
No, I had no idea about that. You know, that's one of those sport lore that you don't really hear much about. And I feel like this one was really cool to get something new from the stories we always get. So I was pretty interested in it.
So tell us, it was a Kobe, supposed to be Kobe's shoe, the Jordan 19?
No, so the idea for the Jordan 19 was essentially the snakeskin upper, right? That mesh upper.
A shroud.
And it was based on snakeskin, and the marketing idea behind the shoe was essentially like snakeskin or Black Mamba kind of. I don't know if Black Mamba was there quite yet, but then it turns out Michael doesn't like snakes at all, is like deathly afraid of them. And essentially like shut down that whole marketing campaign. And it, you know, kind of been this like rumor for years that there was something there around the snakeskin stuff. But Baxter's story on ESPN was basically saying that Kobe was kind of leaning into this mentality anyway, prior to, you know, so like that's 2003, I think, is when the 19 came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the first launch of Black Mamba for Kobe was the Slam cover in 2006, which was really interesting. Like I actually wrote about this in the newsletter, because on Blue Sky, Russ Bengston, former editor in chief of Slam and Kicks, and then
was it Ryan Jones?
What's that?
Ryan Jones, Farmer Jones.
Ryan Jones, who was also editor in chief of Slam at one point. They were both like telling stories around the Jordan 19, and like there's really cool interview story that Ryan talks about where he got a chance to interview Michael. They shot him for the cover of issue 100, like just tying all these things together, which is really cool. And my whole kind of angle on it was like, one, I didn't know that story was actually true about the snakeskin stuff. Two, like it's kind of, you know, much better that it landed with Kobe, because it fit Kobe's mentality anyway. And, you know, just to see kind of the sneaker world kind of come alive for that story and see a bunch of people talking about it. I don't think we've had that in a long time, other than like the forced things, you know, like when there's a cool shoe that comes out or there's a release, we all talk about it. But that was like a moment where I was like, oh, cool. Like this big story that was really well done, really well researched, got, you know, Ryan talking about his experience shooting interviewing Michael Jordan, doing the shoot for the cover of Slam, got Russ talking about the fact that the cover with Kobe in 2006 is not a Black Mamba, obviously. So they had to go find like a generic black snake to do the shoot. Mm-hmm. Russ tells another story about how he was on campus trying to get access to the Jordan 18. At that time, and they were like, people were like not letting him see the shoe for some reason. And as he was about to leave campus, he ran into another friend who basically worked on the Jordan stuff and took him and showed him the 19, like a full year in advance as like a prototype, which is really cool. And I think those are the types of things that like, it just gets me excited about sneakers. You know, it's like those weird stories that we don't know exist. When those pop up, those are the things that really matter. Right. Mm-hmm. And this whole thing like becomes a talking point for us, even where it's like, I don't know. Did you guys know that the Black Mamba was, or the, you know, the snakeskin thing was originally a Jordan thing? Like, that's wild to me. And it's like, how did we not hear about these things before?
And I think to your point as well, Nick, as you read the article, and I think we'll probably link it in the episode details, because it is a worthwhile read and it's not that long. There's a lot of funny asides, because one of the things, and here's another $1 billion idea for anybody that wants it. Inevitably, if somebody ever decides to write the book about the Cold War between Nike basketball and Jordan basketball, like there's a lot of good details in this specific story about that. Because like you mentioned, when Ryan and Russ, and apologies if it was just Ryan, were interviewing Michael Jordan for the aforementioned Slam 100, there's this whole piece where Michael Jordan is accusing Ryan of being a corporate spy, even though Nike and Jordan brand are still very much synonymously linked. There's also the fact that I think for a lot of us, whether we want to admit it or not, we're all Jordan heads because of his close ties to sneakers. And I think all of us knew about his deathly fear of water. So this was kind of an awakening of the fact that, hey, he's also scared of snakes. So that's kind of interesting. And then there's a nice kind of cross-reference to at that moment in time, because this was 2003, and then 2004 was probably the most, let's say, eventful year of Kobe's life, if we're being very kind and not really digging deeper into the details. And kind of the aside of him referring to himself and his inner circle as the Mamba, like, it did feel very kismet. But then even then, as you kind of get the epilogue of the story, they're still very quick to kind of distance themselves between the two brands of Nike basketball and Jordan. So really worthwhile piece. Can't highly recommend it enough. Nick, I know if you know Baxter, please give him the kudos, because this is one of those stories that when we talk about storytelling as it relates to this particular podcast, I think for all of us, we love the fact that it was so organic. Like, this was not telegraphed. This kind of just casually dropped. And then similar to that phenomenon we often discuss on this podcast, we'll all get those text messages from people in our life that are within and outside of the sneaker community saying, hey, did you read this? This was fantastic. And that's kind of when we all puff our chest and say, yes, this is a community and industry.
Are we losing Roy, or is it just me?
Got a little robotic. Can you hear us, Roy?
Sir. Yep.
You said fall off and it started falling off, literally.
Clearly, I've been listening to too much J. Cole. But if we keep this in the... But yeah, worthwhile checking out. And yeah, let us know if you like it, because I think hopefully we get more stories like this. And I know that the Jordan coffee table book was there. And I'll end on this before I end my monologue. There was this iconic kind of, lack of a better term, Mike, you'll appreciate this, a splash page showcasing the promotional material of the snake intertwined with the Jordan that was aforementioned with the snake skin. And that was the first time we saw it. And so it's all these things where, like, you can hear a story, you can hear a story, but the old adage is a picture is worth a thousand words. And that probably represents one of the greater what ifs of what if Michael had co-opted the Mamba, because we know he's the Black Cat, but if he had also been the Black Mamba, I think for a guy like Kobe who values his storytelling as much as his own legacy or did, I would have been very interested to see how does Kobe navigate that without getting that animal we often associate with him.
If Michael was the snake, I'm just going to say we might as well call him the Black Zoo, because they have all these animals. But the Mamba, the goat. The
snake. Yeah. Is it?
The cat.
Cat.
Elephant print.
Yeah. Yes, they call that man Elephant Print.
Young.
Hey, not man, call him Elephant
Print. Young Elephant Print.
Republicans buy sneakers too. There we go. That's political. Look that up.
But it would have been all, there's too many monikers, like Black Cat, Black Mamba, Black Jesus.
He becomes the ODB of NBA warfare. Because just like how ODB many nicknames, like the old dirty Chinese restaurant. So there you go.
Could not do it. That's an interesting story, though.
Yeah, it really was pretty fascinating. Yeah. It's just cool that, like, it started to get other people talking about it, too. I feel like we miss that aspect of like, I don't know. For me, like, and I kind of was trying to, like, wrap my head around this. I don't necessarily think about it as nostalgia, because I'm not trying to, like go back to that either. Like, there's a lot of things that are great about the way sneakers are now, too, that I think most people are kind of, like, offish towards. Yeah. But, like, you know, there's so much good product out now that, you know, like, we just didn't have access to that stuff. Like, you didn't know things came out because you'd have to be going to every brand's store or website consistently to see what new things were 20 years ago. Yeah. And so you always had, like, this, you know, Slam and Complex were kind of the places that you looked for a little bit of, like, insider knowledge around the products, which, you know, obviously we always, like, Russ being the guy that, for me, growing up, seeing, like, his choices in kicks and the stuff that they chose to highlight. And knowing that, like, you know, even, like, in his story, when he was sharing he basically was, like, you know, kind of taken aback again, because he's like, I don't know why they didn't want to show me this thing. It's not like I was leaking things at the time. Like, you know, obviously stuff would leak on Nike Talk, but, like, Russ,
those are employees.
employees. Like, Russ isn't bringing a camera with him to go to Nike, you know, like, he's going to do the interview stuff more, and Slam does, like, the full shoots, you know. It was a whole different formula for media back then, too. So it's just a really interesting kind of the piece kind of tied a bunch of different things together that you know, I just hadn't seen tied together in a long time. So it was really cool.
I just like the fact that we got a sneaker story that wasn't something trying to push us to go buy something for once. Because I feel like every story that comes out is like, story connected to this is coming out, let's go buy it. Or this was just a genuine story that just happened to be tied into, you know, sneakers and sport that was just interesting and not some kind of, you know, marketing. 100%. Yeah.
Wait, like, you guys are telling me that MSNBC video telling me about the rise and fall of Southwest Airlines isn't a big old commercial for Southwest Airlines?
But like, seriously, this experience makes me want a pair of Jordan 19s to just be like, oh, this is a cool thing that makes this shoe important. Because, you know, admittedly, the Jordan 19 is kind of this awkward MJ's done for real. And like, who cares about the Jordan line at that point, right?
Yeah.
And in hindsight, we see the Jordan line and we see like the 20 and the 23 and all that. Like, I was super into the 20 when it came out. But at the same time, I was kind of confused as to, I thought the 20 would be the end of it. And then they kept going. And it's like, well, there's cool stuff that came from that. But being old enough to have watched MJ play a ton, there was a disconnect between where the brand was going with that signature line. And it didn't feel right to me. It didn't feel connected. It didn't mean they didn't make great products, because obviously when they got to, you know, late 20s stuff like that, that stuff was like, probably still competitive at the top of all basketball shoes on the market today.
Yeah.
But, well, yeah, just contextualize it like this. It was that kind of swan song, awkward swan song for MJ himself, but they put Melo in that shoe. They put J Kid in that shoe. I think they did a way better job of marketing that pinnacle model through their existing athletes than they do now. They really expect the digital side to really push those narratives, because kids, I mean, who's, I guess, Trey Young, Bam Adebayo.
Luka.
I can't. Luka wears his own signature shoe, though.
Like Magic shoe, Pablo Mancaro.
Yeah, Paolo. Yeah, Paolo's pushing the signature product. But they had really they were really firing on all cylinders, putting Melo and all those like 2003-04 All Stars in that 19 and the 20. I mean, that whole line of shoes up to like what, the 20, right? Ray Allen was wearing them too. The 23 itself.
Yeah.
They did a really, really good job of like the product, the athlete wearing it now, and the athlete's killing it now, and then the marketing side. It was all.
Yeah.
And I think to your point, Robbie, those endorsers that they had for that specific era of Jordan, they were established. Like all the guys you've listed, Paolo, Trey, they're still not established, as absurd as that is to say, at least not on the levels of the Carmelo and the J Kids of the world. The other thing is as well, to your point, gentlemen, about there's no marketing blitz. Give it 18 months. I'm sure we'll see a whatever you want to call the equivalent of a defining moments pack where they'll package that 19 in the black snakeskin with whatever Kobe 4 has snakes also as a part of the motif. And then there you go. 19 plus 4 is 23. And there's your next pack.
Well, so the Aeris 2 just came out. I saw an ad for Fee Collier wearing them, of the Minnesota Lynx wearing the new Jordan Air.
The women's specific shoe.
Yeah. And both the first one and that second one look really, really, really good. Like, it's a great design, I think. Colorful,
better
bold.
Than anything else Jordan's putting out for athletes. I mean, it looks better than Luka, looks better than Tatum.
They're just not marketing it. Like, I like to see that shoe out more, and especially with the WNBA season starting, hopefully, with the CBA stuff. I like to see that shoe, the Aeris 2, out in the open more, because it's a really good design.
And I think they take more chances with the female athletes now than they do the male. So I think that's why we're seeing the Aeris popping away, because whether anybody wants to admit it or not, there's some component of the female game that's in its ascendancy.
I agree with that. I also think there's a really interesting element to the colorways that is kind of like screwing over basketball shoes right now. Like, the fact that the league has no restrictions means you see all these crazy things. Like, I don't think we shouldn't have them, but like when I looked at like the Reebok Engine A26, like I love the white, the like white and black colorway. It just, it's the cleanest of the bunch to me. I'm not a big fan of the cheetah ones that you guys got. The bright colored ones like are cool and the colors look good, but they also just look like another LaMelo Puma shoe. You know, like once you remove the you get back a ways from the shoe, how do you know what shoe that is? You know, it's not like it's distinguished enough between all the others when you're looking from a distance. And so part of what I think has happened with the Jordan line around that time was like you leaned into these like superstars that, you know, might have been slightly older or whatever, if you think about Jason Kidd, but like, you know, obviously Carmelo is like just coming up at that time. Those guys wore a lot of their own PE colorways, but they didn't have like the 82 game gamut of colorways that a lot of players have now.
Yeah.
And so like, I think if a brand was like really serious about like making an impact in basketball right now, and they wanted to like start fresh as a hoops shoe company, if you came in and made three or four colorways that you just stuck with, you know, like keep them simple, like just like the Jordans, right? Like black and red, mostly black, mostly white, have a little bit of, you know, color options with that. Yeah. But then you have like a couple of limited release or player exclusive, whatever that is. It allows the shoes to carry on the story across the different mediums, across the different, you know, like you could have a Luka shoe and a Tatum shoe that are the same colorways or, you know, like whatever that looks like. And then you could have special colorways. But the problem is, if you're not paying attention to sneakers all the time, day in and day out, there's nothing that really shows you a Tatum shoe. There's nothing that shows you a Luka shoe, because there's nothing that ties it to the team colors on a consistent basis, and there's nothing that ties it to those players on a consistent basis. So unless you know the logo on the tongue of the shoe, which you're not going to see anyway looking from afar, you're kind of just in this weird place of like, ah, that's a cool shoe. And I'm not trying to take away from the design styles, because I think that's a personal preference anyway. And like you can obviously, if you know a Tatum shoe or a Luka shoe, you can see it on court and think, oh, that's it. But you have to know that that's the shoe. Like, it isn't just a Jordan shoe that shows up throughout the NBA. It's a Tatum shoe that isn't really tied to the Celtics, isn't necessarily getting a marketing push that puts it in front of all the kids and has like a following beyond, you know, the diehard Tatum people. And I think that's why Zion's contract getting his signature shoe coming to an end is the same problem that they haven't figured out. And I don't think it's just a Jordan brand thing. I think it's a basketball shoes across the board thing.
Well, what it is, I feel like, is, you know, when we talk about the colors, I don't think they'll go back to that. Just like, hey, here's a couple simple colors, and then we'll go to team PEs, because the people buying, they're marketing the shoes now are to these AAU teams, who are, these kids are looking for the brightest and most obnoxious colors out there, because they're trying to get recognized by, you know, these scouts or pseudo scouts at these AAU games and these tournaments. So they're trying to stand out and be on these blog posts. You know, every time you look up with the ball is life, you got these 12-year-old dunks on kid wearing fill in the blank shoe. That's what they're trying. That's where attention's coming from. Because us, they're like, well, we can, they'll buy it if they like it. If not, we don't care, because we have these slew of kids who are just trying to, you know, I don't know. They're just trying to be different, I guess, for lack of better words. And they're going to put out every obnoxious splash of color shoe I think they can get their hands on, just to appeal to the younger generation, because that's what they want now. I mean, we talk about spider, like those clothes. I mean, I would never wear something like that, because it's just too much color for me. Like, I'm very muted as I got older, but I can see the kids and younger generation, that how it appeals to them and how they get their sales at that point.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting point as well, because you mentioned the fact that these kids are trying to get noticed. They're trying to get chosen for whatever it is they want to go to the next moment in their life. I think the other big difference is, and Nick kind of alluded to this earlier, we grew up, and I think it's very safe to say that all four of us are part of what I consider the slam generation, meaning that was our algorithm. whatever we saw in the back of the Slam magazine in terms of what the brands wanted to highlight as their shoes, that's what got us hype. And then if we were lucky, we'd get Kicks, which was a once a year yearbook moment in time that kind of let us know, hey, this is the year we are about to have from a sneaker perspective. And then also kind of highlighting visionaries, legends, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And it was a quote unquote algorithm that was good for everybody. Now, everyone's algorithm is too damn personalized. So there's no way that, Mike, you're going to see the same thing that Nick is going to see, which is going to be completely different from me. And that's where there is a benefit in the homogeneity of certain things. And hopefully I pronounced that word correctly. But if I didn't, that's okay.
Sounded good to me.
Thanks, Coach. At the same time, like, that's where I think the community is not as strong as it is in the macro sense, but the micro pockets are probably even stronger. But there is kind of this ebb and flow of, is this good for us as people that care about the product and care about the stories, more importantly?
Yeah,
that's kind of interesting to think about, because I do think, and I wonder if it's just an age thing, right? Like, my nephew, you know, is about 12, and like the way he values the appearance of being an athlete, you know, playing baseball and looking like Mookie Betts and having his gold chain and, like, you know, all of those things that are chosen from an aesthetic perspective, you know, to Mike's point about, like, the kids showing up on Ball is Life because they dunked on somebody in a bright color shoe. Like, I mean, maybe it's hindsight, maybe it's just being old, but like, we know that that doesn't work. We know that that's not going to get you a deal. That's not going to get you into the league. Like, all of those things are so meaningless in the long run. I'm not saying that it doesn't make you feel good, but like, you know.
But if I can be devil's advocate in a sense, Nick, it may not get you to the league, but if it opens one door, that's where it's a slippery slope. Because, like, let's say you do dunk on somebody and it's like on hot pink Kleenex boxes of sneakers. People are going to be like, oh, Kleenex box guy. But then you go ahead.
I was just going to say, and the other side of that I'm thinking about is like the NIL deals, right? Like, you get one good moment. You get seen wearing a cool pair of shoes. You get an early NIL deal that's like, you know, maybe pushes you to do more of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't equate long-term success or even...
Not at all.
You know, like,
no, but a lot of times, you know, you're right, 100%. It is it's quick money, but it's a lot of money they're getting now. Think about, like, some of these kids are, you know, making way too much money for their own good. I mean, kudos to them. I'm not mad at them. Be successful any way you can around this country. But it is something where these kids see a portal, or not a portal, but an opening to get the fame through NIL and social media, which are going to be two ways to get paid, knowing that there's a less than 1% chance of me making it to the league. But guess what? I can be a guy dunking on kids in neon shoes. I got this deal. I've made $1 million before I turned 18. I'm never making it to the league. I may not make it to D1 college ball, but I can have this source of income from these different means. I think that's all they think about now. I don't think it's even about going to the NBA for a lot of the kids. It's like, how can I be seen on social media? And how can I get a quick check? End story. I mean, you know?
Yeah. It's the top shotification of our game. Right. Like, we all remember when Top Shot came out, everybody was thinking how this is going to be the next big thing and NFTs are cool. And what it was a bite-sized moment that was in, and you let me know, Nick, because I know you were heavily into the NFT world, but it was a loop, right? Like, it was a loop of the same action over and over again. And to the principle that both of you have just described, that's what we're looking at in terms of giving these kids a calling card. And to your point as well, Mike, like, they get that first million, that's good. And then when that million hits to zero, they're off to finding their next hustle or their next viral moment. And that's basically how we've evolved or devolved, depending on what side of the society you want to look at it from, is just like, instead of fine-tuning your craft as a sport like basketball or baseball, now it's you're fine-tuning a craft as in virality, in terms of how quickly can you go viral. And it doesn't even matter the context or the reason why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the NFT kind of connection is interesting too, because, you know, there's obviously a ton of just terrible things that happened with that whole boom, right? I think there's plenty of brands that we can look at that tried to do things and failed, but there's also plenty of people that did cool shit, started real businesses out of it, and like are still doing, you know, successful things now because of it. And I think that's the same thing with the kids and the, you know, like the kind of quick NIL deals.
Yeah.
It is really interesting to think about how that could potentially like shift basketball, the NBA as a whole, because if kids don't need to make it to the league to become, you know, famous enough for a deal, then maybe that changes the dynamics of the league even further than it has in the past few years. But I go back to like street ball and the And One mixtape era and think like that didn't change the NBA in terms of like the quality of players. If anything, it made the NBA more relatable to me at the time. So maybe that's happening, you know, to a younger generation now where they're seeing the LaMelo Ball wreck his Hummer and think, I want to wreck my Hummer one day.
Like, I want a Hummer to wreck.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's like anything, right? It's like, it's always a slippery slope when people get access to that kind of money or attention at a young age. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, there's somewhere in between like the LaMelo Ball, who obviously came up in that attention from the very beginning, and like, you know, a guy like Jason Tatum, who is like so reserved that like you kind of just don't know what he is about outside of, you know, just being a great basketball player. And like they're like the two extreme ends of like what you can find in the NBA, but the average consumer is somewhere in between those two, you know.
And this is a portion where the AI will cut this silence. So let's move to the next topic. Nick, what are you thinking? Oh, and Mike's got the sternest dad face. Like, if you two don't talk about something right now.
I think we might have lost Mike.
And we've lost either. Robbie. So it's basically turned into a battle royale of podcasters.
I mean, I think that's a pretty good place to wrap. Like, I don't really have any other news type stuff to talk about unless you've got anything that you want to talk about. I mean, Formula One starting back up, baseball starting back up. There's all sorts of
Exhaust Notes podcasts now and forever. We're going to do an episode eventually. I think one day. But it was really funny that you mentioned that because there was a campus-wide forum at the place I work and somebody had mentioned the fact that, hey, does the company I work for have any sort of affiliation with Formula One or any of the athletes? And we all kind of said, no, there isn't. And I do think that it's one of those things that I'm not expecting anything to happen like that, but we'll see. I mean, we're still living in a very short life. Depending on what's your favorite Reddit, you believe we're only on this earth for 2 more years or 200 more years. So hopefully we can split the difference.
Wow, I need to get back on Reddit so I can be prepared.
No, you don't.
Yeah, the Formula One stuff is interesting. I'm working on a Formula One sneakers thing for the newsletter, so I kind of appreciate that you lobbed that up there for me, not knowing that I was working on that. But
there are certain benefits to subscribing to the Sneaker History Substack, and that's one of them is when you can indirectly influence what our chief content creator can write about. So that's why I'm here, and you're welcome, Nick.
Thanks, man. I think there's a really kind of interesting turn that's about to happen with Formula One, and I hope that it comes around to other motorsports too.
And I mean, to take it back to sneakers, right? We did see Jordan's NASCAR team win 2 consecutive races in a row, and I mean that's pretty fantastic as well. And I was cautiously optimistic that, given his proclivity of liking motorsports, I was surprised that he didn't reach out to the inevitable Formula One something or the other. Because I know in the past, Pierre Gasly, driver for Alpine or Renault or whatever you want to call them,
there you go.
He's had moments with Jordan. So I kept thinking, okay, maybe this is that shoe-in, so to speak, to get into that Formula One branding. Because if there's one thing I've noticed about sneakers in general, and if only I knew somebody that had a podcast and a newsletter that could write about the nuances of different sneaker topics, it's the ability for sneakers to trying to bridge that gap into truly being a luxury need. And Formula One is one of the most luxurious sports, if you are to believe press clippings and ad campaigns about it.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting turn that I hope that Formula One is making, right? I think that we're getting to the point where the sneakers within Formula One will matter a little bit more than they ever have. Like, there's always been the partnerships, you know, like K-Swiss and McLaren and Puma and McLaren this year. And
Adidas and Mercedes, right?
Adidas and Mercedes, Nike, yeah. Nike and, you know, Ferrari way back in the day, or Schumacher and Nike, I should say. But, like, there's always a big gap between, like, the super high-end stuff that's, like, very luxury-looking.
Yep.
That we would not normally talk about on this show. And then there's like the occasional speed cat that comes out or something that's like, oh, that's a racing shoe, right? But like, there's never like a consistent connection to again, like the two extremes of like that sport kind of relate to the extremes that I was talking about, you know, the NBA guys. It's the middle where everybody lands, right? Where it's like, how do you make a sneaker that doesn't feel forced into Formula One, and how do you make a you know, Formula One feel not forced onto a sneaker that like gets average consumers excited? Because there's a huge opportunity to connect those dots for people. And you know, it happens occasionally, right? Like we see like some interesting stuff will come out for a particular race or a particular season or whatever, but it never really has like, it never really grows into its own thing. And if you go back into the like 80s and 90s, Formula One had huge footwear partnerships across the board. So like there's a really interesting kind of shift I think about to happen.
Yeah, I think it's growing again, because if you look at even at the collaboration, the three-way collaboration with Bad Bunny, Mercedes and Adidas, they had that one driving shoe, which was really good looking, I think, really good looking shoe. And I think Adidas has done a really good job at creating, we talk about purely the footwear side of things, creating footwear around Mercedes that's not this overly branded. I know a lot of times we have racing inspired things, they like to overly brand with these weird patches and things. I think they've done a good job of making it really sleek, especially when you have Lewis Hamilton as a very like stylish guy who was on that team, and he wasn't going to be wearing things that were like super branded. So I think they really followed that cue well. And with, I guess, who's doing Ferrari now is,
I think everybody's Puma? Still doing Puma, but keep going.
It's still Puma. Yeah. So yeah. I would like to, I think Puma's going to follow that same
strategy.
Idea. When you have Lewis Hamilton there, he's very into fashion. So I think him being a Puma guy already, and then of course with Ferrari now, I think you're going to see a shift in a more luxury style of footwear, like more my luxury stuff centered speed cats or some of the other stuff. Because I mean, even though not F1 related, but still car related, you can do things fun like the Fast and Furious pack, which is really out there.
Yeah.
And then you can do more luxury-driven things that are going to be the more high-end F1 because, and let's be fair, like probably more than not, you're going to have a more higher income person who in the F1 than just general public in most cases.
And I think this, right, inevitably, the hardest thing about making a Formula One sneaker, as is the case with most motorsports, is more often than not, the drivers of said vehicles are in a vehicle that prevents you to see what's being on their feet. So like, that's the biggest thing that I'm not trying to break the internet with that. But then at the same time, to go to your point around Lewis, who is he rumored to be dating right now?
I have no idea.
Kim Kardashian.
Oh, okay. Like, this is a trick question. I have no
No. And I mean, like I said, Mike is a dad of three. I'm a dad of two. So, two cats, one child. There you go. But at the same time, as you were describing what Lewis Hamilton's style is to you, I think if inevitably we will never get something as explicit as, let's say, Nike and Lewis Hamilton partnership. But if rumors are to be believed and he is romantically involved with Kim, and what exactly does Kim have right now? She has Skims. And what else does Skims need? Probably more than anything is a masculine face for the inevitable expansion into the men's market. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. And there's so many rumors right now with all of that, too. Like, you know, I'm sure you saw at some point when Cadillac came out and the guys were wearing Panda Dunks. Mm-hmm. And, like, everybody was like, oh, Nike's going to sponsor the Cadillac team. And, like, as a Formula One fan, I think that would be cool. As a sneaker industry person, professional that I've
Godfather
watched this for so long, like there is no way that Nike would have allowed them to walk out in a shoe that came out, you know, 2 years ago just because it matched their black and white theme, right? So it's kind of like you know, just a a crazy, yeah, I don't know. I'm really curious, like, what people think about this, though. I want to wrap with that and also say, like, the connection that I wanted to talk a little bit more about as I was thinking about it is, like, this Jordan boot that came out, right? It's a racing Jordan 9 boot, to your point about NASCAR. Obviously, there's, like, a huge connection there for Jordan Brand, and who knows where it's going to go, but I do think that there's a lot more possibility right now for that to happen than there ever has been in motorsports, which is cool.
And maybe the way to solve that issue we chatted about is make your car look like the boot. Like, I'm sure there's a colorway for the car itself that you can make it look like a Jordan 9. So then you can still have all the branding with it, but that's for another topic for another day.
Yeah, definitely. And they've done that before on the car in different ways, but like it's definitely like there's not a consistent strategy behind the car connection to the sneakers, but I think this, if anything else, we just need to send this episode to MJ. He'll listen to it. He'll think, God, why didn't I think about that?
Or fuck those podcasters.
Yeah, that's basically what he'd think. Yeah. All right, Joe. Well, thanks for rocking with us. It's been a fun episode. Even though we lost a couple of our guys, it's still been enjoyable. But what did you call it, Rowan?
What do you mean?
The battle royale of podcasters. Yeah.
Yeah. This is battle royale for one generation, for your girlfriend and mom types. This is the Hunger Games. And either way, I just wish we could do a podcast with our two other brothers or the Mount Rushmore of mild mannered sneakerheads. So yeah, we look forward to hearing from you. As always, please like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things. So if nothing else, I continue to see Nick Engvall's beautiful face.
I appreciate that, man. Thanks, everybody, for rocking with us. We'll catch you in the next one. Peace.
Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. If you want more insights into the sneaker world, I've started a newsletter called the Sneaker Newsletter to share my knowledge of over two decades' experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link below or go to thesneakernewsletter.com. Last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.